incinerate it all and collapse the cavern,
making getting out of here an especially good idea.
They reached the cavern wall and the banks of machinery they had already passed on the way in, and ran toward the entrance, still kilometers away.
How long before it happens?
I don't know. Minutes? Leia put on a burst of speed. From long experience, Han knew that when a Jedi was running for her life, normal folk needed to try very hard to keep up. The antenna, not visible until Han used his macro binoculars, was already spinning by the time they reached the cavern entrance. As he watched, a piece of machinery the size of a small refueling station shivered, tore itself off the cavern wall, trailing cables and a field of debris, and rolled across the fungus forest, finally fetching up, deformed against the antenna. The antenna was not slowed by the gigantic apparatus now obscuring it. The thing kept spinning, the huge machine spinning atop it. A moment later, when Han imagined that the antenna was pointing toward the cavern mouth, he lurched forward, pulled by his backpack and metal gear. The pull wasn't strong enough to drag him back into the cavern, but it was exerting considerable force. Then the sensation passed as the antenna kept turning.
Got any ideas, lady?
Yes. Leia shucked her backpack. From within it, she drew out a small holocam, one that Lando had provided them. Got any strapper tape in your bag?
Leia, you're joking.
She shook her head. I'm going to set it to record and transmit. If we can get any visual images from this to take back to the surface, it might help persuade Lando what's going on down here.
Han set his pack down and began rummaging through it.
What is going on down here?
Something caused the complex, and Han, the complex is planet-wide, to end its sensor operations. Systematically, caverns have been self-destructing. These explosions are tests, sort of proofs of concept, making sure that the ancient program is still achievable.
You got all that from kissing a glowing ball of light?
She glared, but nodded.
Because I asked direct, specific questions this time, I think, and because I'd gotten better at communicating with them through practice. Anyway, there are going to be a few more caverns blowing up as the tests come to an end. Then they'll blow all the remaining caverns in a sequence that will crack the world into pieces.
You're kidding, right?
Han, Kessel has less than a week to live.
Leia got the holocam strapped into place on the stone wall, oriented more or less toward the center of the cavern, and set to maximum zoom. She set it to broadcast. Han confirmed that he was receiving its signal on the holocam in his own bag. Then they ran, their great bounding, low-gravity steps carrying them rapidly away from the source of the explosion to come.
Got any idea how to get out of here?
Han asked between breaths. Leia nodded.
Sensor leads up to the surface. Shafts concealed topside, but I know what to look for down here. If we survive.
They passed the mound of rocks, and then the wreckage of their speeder. Han suddenly felt warmth on his back. He saw the tunnel walls all around and ahead of him, illuminated. The shadow of the rock mound cleaving the light into two halves. He grabbed Leia's hand and hauled her back, crashing with her to the stone floor just in front of the speeder. A thunder like he had never known, and a howling wind driving stone and metal roared past, rocking the wrecked vehicle. Alana awoke, frightened out of a dream she couldn't remember. She pulled her covers tighter around her and looked out the viewport. It showed only the sky above Kessel, a glittering starfield, a sliver of a moon, an empty patch where the Maw was. R2-D2, at the foot of her bed, offered a questioning tweetle. She wasn't sure exactly what he said, but she had a sense of it.
I don't know,
she said.
But it isn't good.
3 minutes later, after she lay down and tried to go back to sleep, the groundquake hit. At first it was just a low rumbling and a sense of dread. She distinctly heard C-3PO say,
Oh dear!
From an adjoining room. Then there were crashes from throughout the building as items fell off shelves and furniture toppled. The walls shook, dust filtered down from the tiles overhead. Alana drew the covers over her head and clamped her hands over her ears, willing it all to go away. She desperately wanted to be in her own little bunk on the Falcon. She'd be safe there, even with Han and Leia gone. She liked Lando and Tendra, but they were almost strangers. She wanted to be with her family. Before the rumbling had quite subsided, the door to her room crashed open and light sprang up, visible at the edges of and through her cover. She flipped her blanket down and saw Lando, groggy and disheveled, wearing only sleep pants decorated with the insignia of Tendrondo Arms. His voice was not as smooth as usual.
Are you all right?
She nodded.
Can I sleep on the Falcon from now on?
He thought about it.
Yes, you can. In fact, I wish I could.
He began to draw the door closed.
Good night, Uncle Lando.
Good night, sweetie.
Chapter 18. City of Dorshan, Doran.
The city was overcast and very windy on the morning of Luke's second day of training. Ben could see that the Keldors on the streets were agitated. They walked briskly, said little to one another, and all but ignored the humans. As they came within a block of the Baron Doe Temple, Ben learned why. A wail, mechanical and unsettling, rose in the distance from several points in the city. Keldors immediately ran for nearby doorways and gateways. As far as Ben could tell, they were rushing to homes that were not their own. No one ran farther than two buildings from his or her current position, and residents of those buildings were opening the outer doors and urging them in as they arrived. Some waved for Luke and Ben to enter. A general announcement in the Keldor language sounded across both Skywalker's comlinks. Luke and Ben put on a burst of speed and rushed to the temple. Curiously, the walls there were retracting into slots in the ground, leaving the estate seemingly undefended. Luke and Ben made it into the main building's antechamber, running past Histora Pond, who was on front door duty, peering outside and urging pedestrians in. The general announcement switched to basic, recited by a woman with a pronounced Corellian accent.
This is a general announcement. A Force 4 storm front is approaching the city of Dorshan. All residents and visitors should seek shelter immediately. The storm is approaching from the south and will be at the outskirts of Dorshan within 7 standard minutes. All spaceport traffic is suspended for the duration of the storm event. A Force 4 storm is characterized by winds of up to 180 kilometers per hour, periodic funnel clouds and clusters, and rapid lightning strikes.
She hadn't mentioned rain, but outside the doors the sky was now almost black, and sheeting rain descended as rapidly and unexpectedly as a giant foot. 1 minute it was dry, the next, rain was hitting the pathway and street beyond so hard that drops seemed to explode upon contact. As Ben watched, the roof of a landspeeder went spinning by as if hurled by a rancor. Ben whistled.
You don't mess around with your storms, do you?
Histora Pond shook her head.
In the old days, the people only had the sages to warn them of storms. Today, there are weather stations and satellites, but a storm can still coalesce in moments. Sometimes a sage will know in advance of the most modern instruments.
Did you lower the wall to keep it from blowing away?
Yes. Most of the time, it's up to keep people from wandering around on the grounds. But at times like this, we want people to be able to rush in. Besides, a wall is nothing but a big wind sail. One good gust, no matter how strong your welding is, and a section of wall could go flying, and nobody wants to be where it lands.
She had her attention on the outdoors through her entire speech, constantly scanning for travelers in need of immediate shelter. But the street, now dimly illuminated by lights, was empty of traffic. The side passage through which they had been conducted on their first night now opened for the Skywalkers. Luke headed through to his lesson. Ben found a lounge area, packed with Baron Doe and a few trapped pedestrians, where a large wall monitor alternated between satellite views of the storm front and holo recordings of the effects of weather around the capital city. It was a spectacular show, and one that went on for hours. Lightning descended from the clouds, mostly striking harmlessly against lightning rods and shielded antennas, but occasionally hitting the tall, leafy plants that served the Keldors as trees. Such a strike superheated the fluids within the plant, causing it to explode and spray burning cellulose in all directions. Funnel clouds touched down at several points, twisting and dancing their way along the streets or across rooftops, often damaging but not destroying the buildings. But on one occasion, an especially vicious funnel swept across a large theater, grinding it into unrelated chunks of permacrete, shredding lengths of tapestries and recognizable padded seats, spraying all the debris out across the surrounding few blocks. One of the non-sage Keldor present said something in his own language, then, for Ben's benefit, translated.
I hope they were in their basement levels.
Ben nodded.
Me too.
By mid-afternoon, the storm front had passed. Several injuries were reported, but no deaths. The visitors to the Barando Temple thanked their hosts and returned to their lives. Luke found Ben lingering in the lounge.
All done, he said.
You've mastered the technique?
And I'm making inroads into the other lightning rod techniques. By the way, we've been invited to Charsay Saul's farewell ceremony. Care to attend?
Yeah,
Ben frowned.
It was mentioned a few times here while everyone was watching the storm coverage. I got a strange sense about it.
What do you mean?
His students, like Testora Pon, were sad about it. So were the Barando masters. But it was different.
Of course it was. Masters tend to have a greater depth of philosophy and understanding about such things.
Dad, they were even sadder.
That got Luke's attention.
What's that again?
I got the impression that the masters had an even deeper regret.
Interesting.
Luke frowned as he thought about it. Now I'm certain we need to attend. It happened at nightfall. Behind the main temple, on a broad paved area, stood a raised hearth surrounded by a bronze-colored metal rim. On the hearth, a pyre had been built. It was not made of wood, for wood did not burn in Doran's oxygen-free atmosphere. Instead, it comprised planks made of a self-contained solid fuel already enriched with oxygen. For the first hour, as the sun went down and Baron Doe and friends gathered, Charsay Saul circulated, greeting guests. He was, by Keldor standards, short and burly, meaning that to Ben he looked somewhat less scrawny than the others. He might have been old by Keldor standards, but he moved energetically and easily. He had certainly shown considerable combat skill when working with Ben the previous day. He wore a simple draping robe in black. A hood hung partway down his back. Drinks and tidbits of food were served. Luke and Ben, the only non-Keldor present, did not partake. Eventually, Charsay Saul stood up on a bench-like platform, also made of the combustible material, and addressed those who were gathered. He spoke in the Keldor language, but Testora Pon, standing near the Skywalkers, translated into Basic.
Thank you all for attending. There is no lonelier thought than the idea that you might die alone. There is no more comforting thought than that you may die gently among friends. I now take that step, moving aside so that others may succeed me. I pray that I will be remembered fondly. I will remember all of you fondly.
So saying, he flipped his hood up so that it shrouded his eyes. He lay down on the platform upon which he had been standing. He placed his hands together, fingers laced over his chest. As the others watched in silence, his breathing slowed. Ben could feel him in the Force, a strong, vital presence. Then the Force presence that was Charsay Saul faded, became smaller. In moments, it was completely gone, though his body still lay on the platform. Four Keldors approached the platform. They carried what looked like a casket made of the same combustible material. Two poles were slid through hoops along the casket's sides. One Keldor held each end of each pole. They maneuvered the casket over the body of Charsay Saul and lowered it, carefully settling it into place. A moment later, they lifted it clear of the platform. The top layer of the platform adhered to the casket's underside. The bearers carried the casket and placed it atop the pyre, then withdrew the poles and stepped back. Mistress Tyla Mong approached the pyre. From the distance of a meter, she extended her hand. A crackle of lightning leapt from the end of her fingers to strike the base of the pyre. Instantly, the combustible material caught fire. an odd purplish flame that rapidly spread across all the surfaces of pyre and casket. The flame became very fierce, very fast. Soon the Keldors and the two humans had to stand farther back so as not to be burned themselves. Purple flames leapt into the sky, rising nearly to the height of the temple roof. The onlookers spoke little, but soberly watched the fire consume the body of their friend. Not long after, the pyre collapsed. Remains of the casket fell into the center of the burning mass. The flames were still fierce, but dying. One by one, the Keldors began turning away, taking their leave. At an appropriate time, before the last of the Baron Doe had left, Luke thanked Tylamong and led Ben around the building toward the front gates.
"Kind of sad," Ben said. "He was pretty nice, a good fighter, though he didn't have a lot of weapons experience, staff mostly."
Luke's tone was equally soft. "It always annoys me to be lied to."
"I wasn't lying to you, Dad."
"What?" Luke looked startled. No, not you. Them."
"What do you mean?"
They passed through the gates. Instead of turning south toward the spaceport, Luke led them north, toward the mercantile district. "They lied about Charsey Saul. He didn't die, and they didn't cremate him."
"Are you kidding? I felt him die."
"You felt him vanish in the Force, as I did. A graduated diminishment that was not much different in the way it felt to Force-sensitive onlookers from death. Ben, have you ever met anyone who could conceal himself in the Force?" Ben grinned.
"Other than myself and Jason and you and..."
"They put an empty casket on that pyre and burned it. And ordinarily I don't need to pry into other people's secrets. But this one may have something to do with what Jason learned here, so we have to root out the truth. We're going to find a restaurant for oxygen breathers, have a good meal with our masks off, and then we're going to come back here and find the truth." Two hours later, they returned, but not as official visitors this time. Instead of walking up the street, they moved as Jedi knew how to, darting from dark place to dark place, sending tiny distractions into the minds of pedestrians so they might pass unnoticed. Their dark garments helped, as did the lateness of the hour and the still ominous cloud cover which blocked out starlight and moonlight. Soon enough, they found themselves at the base of the durasteel and transparasteel walls of the temple. Luke gauged the height and sprang upward. He came to rest atop, one haunch on the transparasteel lip, balancing there. He extended his hand down for his son. Ben leapt up, letting the Force enhance his jump. He landed beside Luke in a crouch, both boot heels on the transparasteel lip, and grinned at his father. Together they leapt down into the grounds of the temple. Moments later, they stood by the hearth where Charsey Saul had theoretically burned. The remains of the fire had been mopped up. No ashes remained. Luke turned his attention to the platform where the Keldor had stood for his speech, had laid down to die. "If we assume that this was the means by which he disappeared, there's probably a mechanism here."
"Or a sensor," Ben said, "from which they're watching us right now and plotting our demise."
"You watch too many holodramas." Luke stroked the platform along its top.
"No, it doesn't take that many before you learn all the rules."
Luke paused over one spot. "If he triggered the mechanism himself, it was with use of the Force."
"We would have felt that."
"Good point. So it was done by a Confederate." Luke snapped his fingers, and a portion of the top of the platform swung downward, leaving a gap easily large enough for a good-sized human or a Keldor to fit through. "Shall we?"
"Masters first."
They used Luke's hook and grapnel, no longer worn on his primary belt but still in his customary gear, to descend. 10 meters down, their boots touched a stone floor. Luke pointed a finger up, and the hook dislodged, dropping into his other hand. He gestured again, and the rectangular opening above their heads closed. They were in a storage chamber of some sort. There were many metal shelves here, loaded with crates marked in the Keldor language. There were also several large containers that themselves looked like coffins, but silvery lozenge-shaped high-tech coffins. It was all dimly lit by low-intensity glow rods. They stood on some sort of hydraulic platform that, retracted as it was now, was almost at floor level, but when raised, should take it up to the ceiling and the hidden entrance above.
"Pretty simple," Ben whispered.
Luke tucked his grapnel and line away, nodding. He gestured toward the one door out of the chamber. They waited by the door, extending their perceptions through it. In the force, Ben could feel living beings beyond, but not close by. Luke activated the door. It slid open, quietly. But the hiss was loud enough to make Ben cringe. Sneaking around was so much more difficult when you had to rely on other people's machinery, he decided. He followed his father into a plain, permacrete-lined corridor. There was a large rolling cart against the hallway wall opposite. Other doors lined the hall. The force presences Ben had detected were beyond the one at the end of the hall, to the left. Luke had come to the same conclusion. Together they approached the door. It was sturdy Durasteel, too thick for sound to carry through. Luke looked at Ben and shrugged.
"Might as well barge in," he whispered.
"They're barren dosages. They're not going to try to kill people for prowling through their basement. I hope."
Luke smiled. He activated the door, and it slid up. The chamber beyond was not large. Two shining metal rails at waist height led into a round hole, a meter in diameter, in the wall. One of the lozenge coffin containers rested on those rails. Beside the container stood Mistress Tyla Mong, Master Charsay Saul, and two other masters whose names Ben had not learned. All four turned in surprise at their entry. "I apologize for the intrusion," Luke said. "Master Charsay Saul, you look very good for one who's recently deceased." Tyla Mong looked decidedly unhappy.
"This is unforgivably rude of you."
"Unfortunately, my need, which I expressed to you, a need involving all possible knowledge about Jason Solo, forces me to do some uncomfortable things, such as intrude on your rituals. The problem is, when I realized that Charsay Saul was not dead, it occurred to me that your predecessor, Koro Zil, might not be dead either. True?" Tyla Mong, tight-lipped, did not immediately answer. Charsay Saul spoke up.
"In a moment, I will climb into the transport."
He indicated the silver lozenge.
"I will be swept away, never again to see sunlight, the temple, or my family. Then Charsay Saul will truly be dead."
"Charsay Saul will," Luke said. "But you won't." Charsay Saul hesitated, then nodded.
"I will take a new name. Charsay Saul will be dead."
"So Koro Zil also took a new name?" Tyla Mong interrupted.
"We cannot answer that. It is forbidden."
"And yet I need to speak to Koro Zil, or whoever he is now." Tyla Mong looked at them, considering.
"This could be arranged if you are willing to do what Charsay Saul is about to do."
That alarmed Ben.
"Fake our deaths?"
"No. Climb into a transport and ride to where Charsay Saul is going."
"I will go," Luke said. "Ben can stay here."
"It is both, or neither,"
Tyla Mong said.
"Answers for both, or answers for none."
Luke frowned, but Ben nodded.
"I'm in."
His father turned to him.
"Ben." "Dad, Jason, Coruscant, answers?"
Luke scowled. "I don't like it that you can win an argument without using verbs." Ben just smiled at him. Charsay Saul climbed into his transport. The lid was lowered over him. Tyla Mong shoved the transport along the rails until it fully entered the hole in the wall. Then gravity, magnetic propulsion, or some other motivator Ben couldn't detect took over. The transport disappeared, clattering its way down into the depths of the planet. The other two Baron Doe masters returned with transports on rolling carts. They lifted one onto the rails. Luke climbed in and gave Ben one final encouraging look. Then the masters lowered the lid on him, too, and shoved him into the railed tunnel. As they positioned his transport on the rails, Ben wondered what he was getting into this time, and whether he would soon consider his time on the surface of Doran to have been a vacation spot in comparison.
Calrissian Nunba Mines, Kessel.
They had breakfast in the conference room where Lando, Tendra, and Nian Nunba had first talked to Han and Leia, but none of the adults were there now. Nana served, C-3PO chattered, Chance treated his food as though it were as much a toy as a meal, and Alana moped, scarcely tasting her food. Lando's wild yell of victory jolted her. She stared wide-eyed as he burst into the conference room, his hip cloak askew, his face all smiles.
"Get your breath mask," he told her. "We're going on the Lady Luck, my yacht, to pick up your parents."
10 minutes later, Lando, Tendra, Alana, and Nian Nunba all crowded into the cockpit of the Lady Luck, came in for a landing on a salt plain many kilometers from the mine. Han and Leia stood there in the middle of nowhere, breath masks not concealing the smiles on their faces. They looked dirty, scuffed, tired, and cold, but they had never looked better to Alana.
"That's the way it is with your folks," Lando told Alana. "Everything's fine now."
Chapter 19. Calrissian Nunba Mines, Kessel.
Things happened fast after the Solo's return. Mere minutes after Lando, Tendra, and Nian Nunba heard the Solo's story, they placed a rush order to Trang Robotics for dozens of small flying sensor drones, a type used in military operations for reconnaissance over a large area. 2 days later, a first shipment of 10 drones arrived. Tendra already had their programming worked up and ready to be installed. Then Han and Lando used the Falcon to take the drones to the sensor access tunnel by which Han and Leia had escaped the underworld. They released the drones into the shaft, planted a data relay unit there, and returned to the mine works. Hours later, the drones had transmitted enough visual and sensor recordings that the data could begin to be integrated. In the conference room, now being used as the Calrissian Nunba Solo base of operations, Tendra brought up a schematic of the planet, a green wireframe of the entire world.
"All right, start your pod racers."
Tendra pressed a button on her console, and an elaborate webwork of yellow lines appeared on the diagram. The yellow web spread hundreds of kilometers from the site of the mine works, straight lines intersecting at larger bulbous spots. Leia leaned in close, peering at the design.
"Where were we?"
Tendra tapped a spot on the diagram, a yellow line between two closely situated yellow blotches.
"This is where you escaped the complex."
She tapped one of the two yellow zones, which was dotted with blackness.
"This is the cavern that blew up."
Han whistled.
"Every one of those yellow things is a cavern?"
Tendra nodded.
"Every one. All part of the same ecosphere, with pretty much the same sorts of life forms. A lot of the caverns were destroyed already, though, apparently due to magnetics and explosive devices like the one you saw at the center of yours. Sometimes they cause complete cavern collapses, sometimes not."
"And if Leia's interpretation of her contact with the bogey is correct..."
Lando raised a hand to forestall an objection from Leia.
"And I'm certain it is. Then we have a limited amount of time to figure out how to disarm the rest of those devices before they all blow up and crack Kessel into pieces."
He nodded to his wife.
"Show them the rest." "Oh, good," Han muttered. "There's more."
Tendra keyed in another command, and more wireframe data superimposed itself on the schematic of Kessel. Red tracings, complicated but small, appeared in several spots on the planet's surface, and a series of thick orange lines, jagged and wandering, seemed to meander their way through the center of the planet from pole to pole.
"Red is mine works," Lando explained,
and he tapped the one closest to where Tendra had indicated a moment earlier.
"You are here. The orange thing is an enormous fault system. The seismologists made us aware of it as they've been investigating the groundquake phenomena. We had them run some numbers, and it's pretty clear that if enough of these caverns blow up at the same time, it'll cause the fault to crack, basically shaking Kessel to pieces."
Nian Nunba offered a comment in his own language, and Lando translated.
"He says for Han not even to talk about just evacuating. We want to save this planet."
Han grimaced.
"I hate it when I'm the only sensible one. It's a bad precedent for me. But it's even worse when no one gets to be the only sensible one.
Leia waved away his objection and turned back to Lando and Tendra.
So how do we visit, investigate, analyze, and then defuse all those detonation devices in the time we have available?
Lando looked unhappy.
That's where I'm stumped. We're already losing drones to the bogeys. They get too close, the bogeys come out to investigate, there's contact, and the bogeys go down the way your speeder did that first time. We had 6 of 10 drones go down like that already, and only 2 have recovered sufficiently to continue their missions. I'm not sure how to get a crew of demolition experts and scientists down there, keep them safe, give them enough time to figure out how to defuse the explosives. It sounds pretty close to impossible.
Han opened his mouth to speak, then closed it again.
Leia glanced his way. I felt that.
No, you didn't.
You had an idea.
I was just yawning.
She grinned at him.
I know you think the galaxy would be a better place without Kessel in it, but not everyone agrees.
Come on, old buddy.
There was a genuine plea in Lando's tone.
If you've got an idea, let's hear it.
Han sighed.
All right. My idea is this. You don't even try to defuse those things. Instead, you set them off.
Lando's brows rose.
We're not even waiting for them to blow up my world? We're doing it ourselves? No.
Han pointed at the yellow patches on the monitor screen.
It's not just that they're blowing up. It's that they're blowing up all at once, right? But if you set them off in some sort of random order, some sequence that will keep the strain from cracking that big fault...
Lando's face cleared.
Han, you just earned yourself some shares in Calrissian Number. Thanks, but I'd rather have shares in a firm that makes space station trash compactors. I can arrange that.
Lando turned back to the map.
We get one of the big tunnel grinders, one that's not cracking minerals anymore, and dig a shaft straight down to the tunnel nearest the surface. That'll give us a straight in and out big enough for small transports. We'll need teams of demolition experts who can figure out how to set off those explosive mounds reliably.
The Jedi can help, Leia said. I'll...
No, Han said,
and the others echoed his sentiment.
Why not?
The Jedi have government watchers now, remember?
Han said.
This world represents big, scary technology like Centerpoint Station did. Things the government could study. As soon as the government hears about what's here...
Leia nodded ruefully.
That's true. They'll put a halt on all proceedings until they've sorted out what they think should be done. And that decision will be slowed to a standstill by the promise of new technology. Then it'll stay deadlocked until everything blows up and Kessel becomes a cloud of asteroids.
So no Jedi, Lando said. Other than you, of course.
Leia sighed.
Agreed.
Tendra looked thoughtful.
So, step one, I guess, is to figure out what we can do to set off those explosive dumps at the times of our choosing.
Deep beneath the surface of Doran.
Though he had expected